I mean, it was a check, but money, basically. So, I don't know. I think they deserve to get compensated. Like Derek said, if they're using their likeness and they're going to make money off these kids for years.
Well, yeah. I think if they're forced to go to school, they should maybe show up to class and learn something, because otherwise they're taking a spot that somebody would want to have. You know, colleges can only have so many students in them.
They'll make room for these kids because these kids are a cash cow for the universities.
Right.
And the argument goes, we're making so much money for these universities. It's really more money than the universities could spend.
Right.
And it funds everything else that they do. That, you know what? Kick some of that back to us. Like, we want to get paid salaries. I don't agree with that at all. Okay. Congratulations on being one of the best football players or basketball players or whatever in the country. And having a path to professional sports. That's when you get paid. You're still not good enough to get paid. Because the league says you're not good enough to get paid.
But treat them like amateurs in all respects then. You know, if I agree with you. And they're not. So it's just disgusting. Either they're amateurs and they're not getting paid and you're not making tons of money off of them, or they're professionals and give them something. Like, I don't know what it should be, but
or you wait until they've done that and then give them the money.
But let me give you
get through the 1 year of school and then we'll put you on a salary.
Give them health insurance.
Here's an interesting, they get it. I mean, if you're in one of these programs, all your meals are paid for, you're getting a free ride to school, all your doctor visits are paid. They pay for everything to make sure that you're healthy and able to get out on the field or the court every week. But let me give you an interesting, I don't think this is a straw man, I think this is a good corollary to this. If a bunch of kids at MIT come up with a cure for cancer, they can turn around and patent that. And MIT is going to demand a cut of the profits because it was developed at MIT. But those kids are going to get the lion's share of the money for that. This happens at colleges and universities all over the country. That's part of how MIT pays for all of its expansion and everything that it's doing, is if you are an MIT researcher, if you are an MIT, which is their graduate students
and
their professors.
Doesn't that stuff get put into a trust until that student is 21 years old?
No, I don't think so. I think if you have that cure for cancer at 18, like you can patent it and start making money off of it right away. But MIT, by virtue of being associated with the university, you have to give the university a cut. Everybody says that's okay. Okay? The university is making millions.
I don't think that's okay.
What? You shouldn't give the university a cut? I mean, it's their equipment. They're giving you the education. They're giving you...
They're paying for the education.
They're paying for the... Well, the kids are paying for the education.
Well, not they could be scholarship students. It doesn't matter. I mean, you know?
It's not cheap going to MIT.
No, it's not.
They wouldn't let me in.
But if you do what you're at that school to do, which is to be really smart and come up with smart science-y things,
right. You
get to keep the money from that. If you're a basketball player and you're going to Boston College and you're the best basketball player in the country, they're making millions because they're selling calendars, they're selling jerseys, they're selling mugs, everything's got your name on it, and you're not getting a dime.
Here's where it falls apart.
Yeah.
If you're going to MIT... You're going to MIT because that's a school that fosters science. If you're going to a basketball college, I could see the corollary. But you're going to a regular college because that's what's required for a major league to pick you up.
But these kids are all going to certain colleges. They're not going to Bunker Hill. They're not going to Boston University. They're going to Baylor. They're going to Duke. They're going to Kentucky and Virginia Tech.
But they're not going there to learn their craft, is what I'm saying.
They are.
Because they're going to learn how to be a football player.
The NBA, the NFL will not take you unless you've spent at least 2 years in the college program. The NBA will not take you unless you've spent at least 1 year in a college program.
Right.
There's no minor league. Like baseball, you can go straight from high school into baseball because they're going to chuck you in the minors for a couple of years. Hockey will take kids straight out of college now. The NBA and the NFL won't. Because the main reason they won't do it is because they don't want to take some underdeveloped 18-year-old kid and put him on a court on a field with 25 and 30-year-olds and have him get broken into 50 pieces. They want them to build themselves up a little bit and play at that higher level before they throw them to the wolves.
So this has absolutely nothing to do with education
whatsoever. No.
I mean, that's probably like a PR talking point that the NFL and the NBA uses, but yeah, nothing to do with education. And it's really, I think, the NCAA that should be compensating these kids, not necessarily the
university. This kid doesn't even want education. This kid Sam is just like, I play basketball. I want to play basketball. Why am I waiting a year to play basketball? Give me my millions.
They should create a minor league and totally bypass this whole college thing.
You should stay in Australia.
Well, there is that.
Yeah.
Trump's going to kick out all the immigrants anyway.
That's yes. Right. He's not going to be able to get in.
Mm-hmm. WMFO Medford. In technology news, you'll both like this. Bomb-sniffing dogs may soon be a thing of the past, as researchers at MIT have created bomb-sniffing plants. In a paper published in Nature Materials, the MIT team explained how they painted spinach plants with a solution containing carbon nanotubes that emit fluorescent light when they encounter materials used in bombs. By scanning the plants with an infrared sensor on a smartphone, the team was able to detect the presence of explosive materials within 10 minutes of the plant's exposure. The team has also developed nanosensors that can detect nitric oxide and sarin, an odorless, colorless gas that can be used as a chemical weapon.
Well, at least they're not hurting the doggies.
Plants.
Yeah, maybe plants. They put plants in the tea in the subway station to protect us, and it'll look nice.
And it'll create oxygen.
Yeah.
That may be where they're going with this.
Cool.
Because it may be that, you know, you walk into a bus station or you walk into a sports stadium and you see plants all over the place and you see ground cover all over the place. Right. And you think, well, that's a nice background feature. Why it's really there is they've got an infrared sensor trained on it. And apparently it happens within 10 minutes.
Well, within 10 minutes, everything could be toast.
Plants absorb everything that's in the environment,
right,
and process it almost immediately. So they're very good at sniffing this sort of stuff out.
I wonder if they're going to develop plants that are drug sniffing as well, because then we won't be able to have our marijuana on us.
Or at the very worst, have plants that become mutated by these chemicals and turn into flesh eating, people eating zombie plants.
From the way this is described, you could do it with pretty much any substance that you wanted. You just have to figure out how to bond it to these nanotubes. So, yeah, marijuana would work, but now we're talking about plant-on-plant violence.
Feed me, Seymour.
Nobody likes that.
Oh, no, why? There's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather.
Your Boston 5-day forecast does feature some stormy weather. Showers tonight. Temperatures fall only into the mid-50s, and then tomorrow, more showers in the afternoon, but we will reach a high in the low 70s. Temperatures fall back into the upper 40s tomorrow night. Friday and Saturday, mostly sunny, highs in the mid-50s, lows Friday night down in the upper 30s. Watch out for some frost in those colder suburbs. Lows Saturday night around the mid-40s. And then on Sunday, sunny, perfect, beautiful autumn day, high in the mid-50s, low around 40 degrees on Sunday night. Get out, get those leaves raked up. You know you have to do it. And while you're out there, don't forget, set them clocks ahead, kids. This is the clock setting weekend?
Nope. Fall back.
This is the clock. Set those clocks back, kids.
Get an extra hour.
This is the clock setting back weekend.
Yay!
So, you know, you do what I do and wait until Monday morning when your alarm goes off to go to work. You set it back an hour then. You get an extra hour of sleep before you have to go to work. I've been doing this for years.
Yeah.
I love it. And by the way, when you change your clocks, it is also a great time to change the batteries in your smoke detectors and your bong water. It doesn't change itself, kids.
That is true. And bong water gets really nasty.
Get those three things done.
Do you know that when you spill bong water, it smells just like McDonald's French fries?
Well, I don't know if it smells. No, I never mistook it for McDonald's French fries, I'll tell you that. When we come back, we're going to be delving into the ballot questions here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Back after this on WMFO Medford.
Anytime is a good time for broiling thick, juicy steaks, indoors or out. What kind of steaks? Tenderloin, porterhouse, T-bone, sirloin, or rib steaks. They're all naturally tender and excellent for broiling in the top USDA quality grades, prime, choice, and good. Prime is the top grade, and choice is almost as high in quality. For more information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington 20250.
Hi, this is James Brown, soul brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
I'm going to the hardware store.
Oh, will you pick up 800 lumen bulbs?
800 more flowers? The neighbors will think we're wacky.
Not flower bulbs, light bulbs.
Come on, Dad. Lumens tell you how bright the bulb is. We can replace our 60-watt bulbs with energy-saving bulbs that give off about 800 lumens.
So, we'll save money.
Right.
Got it. 800 lumens and more savings.
Lumens, the new way to shop for light. Learn more at energysavers.gov.
WMFO Medford. It is The Big Picture. Derek, Gary, Joel, and Marielle Cabral with you until 9 o'clock tonight. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-WMFO. In addition to the presidential race and the local races, we also have some ballot questions here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And we're going to take you in depth on the four ballot questions that we have. And thanks to a quirk of our FCC license, we cannot be biased about these in any way, shape, or form. So if you think media bias is out of control, you're in the right place. There is none here. It is, in fact, outlawed by the federal government, and we will be fined if we engage in any sort of media bias.
That's not true. The FCC is largely a reactionary organization, so only if the listeners complain will
so
we be fined.
So don't complain. Just be cool. Just be cool, man.
Just be cool. Don't be a narc.
Sit along. Come along for the ride with us. You know?
Yeah. Well, yeah. No, we're not. We're gonna do our jobs, and we're gonna be reasonable commentators for once, and not talk about how some of these questions are a complete joke. Okay.
Oh, hey.
Question number one: expanding slot machine gaming. This is what you will see on the ballot. A yes vote would allow a second slots parlor to exist in Massachusetts. The 2011 gambling law currently allows for up to 3 resort casinos and 1 slots parlor. The slots parlor license is owned by Penn National Gaming, which operates Plain Ridge Park Casino in Plainville. Now, here's the one thing you need to know about this. There's a catch on this slots parlor, okay? The casino must be on a site at least 4 acres large and within 1,500 feet of a horse track. There's only one place in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts that has a site that is 4 acres large and within 1,500 feet of a horse track.
Revere?
Suffolk Downs and Revere.
My.
You are correct.
Hey.
This is a ballot question that would authorize a casino at Suffolk Downs.
Well, I mean, there's been a lot of gambling going on there for decades and decades. Why should a referendum make a difference in that?
Because the corporation's way of running around.
It's a cash grab, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's interesting because they're talking about we're going to get $80 million in revenue off of this. That's a projection, by the way. We don't know that. They do guarantee $12 million to support horse racing and $5 million for the city of Revere. Now, what's interesting about this, and take this as you will, I don't know who's actually in favor of this bill because nobody has really come out and said, yes, I support question number one.
Well, nobody wants to say, hey, I'm a chronic gambler and this is going to enable me.
But among those opposed are the current mayor of Revere, Brian Arrigo, who would make $5 million annually for his city if he said yes. and Suffolk Downs Chief Operating Officer Chip Tuttle.
I saw that.
Who would have a slots parlor next to his horse track. Now, why are they both opposed to this? Well, I don't know why Revere's opposed to it. I have never met a politician who would walk away from $5 million.
Because that's a projection, and casinos are usually way worse.
I think the $5 million is, I think that's guaranteed.
Okay.
I think that's a guaranteed payment to the city of Revere. And by the way, that mayor's race last year, full disclosure, I was working with one of the candidates, really came down to this issue and the fact that they weren't getting any gambling money. So now you have former city councilor Arrigo sitting there saying, no, we don't want this money either, which means the voters are probably going to chuck him out in a couple of years. Chip Tuttle is opposed to it because this would be an independently run slots parlor. It would have no affiliation whatsoever with Suffolk Downs.
Right.
Joe Curtatone is opposed to it, of course.
Mayor Joe.
Now, how many jobs? He's opposed to everything. How many jobs would this create in Revere?
1,500 is the number that's being thrown around.
And how many lives would this ruin?
Now, whether this is, but the lives are ruined either way.
It's Revere. Come on,
it's Revere.
The lives are ruined either way.
You know what? No one's going to vote for this because no one wants to go to Revere.
It's not. It. I don't mean in that sense because
and, you know, going back,
Revere's not that bad.
Going back to a conversation,
my sister lives in Revere.
Going back to a conversation we had a few hours ago when this program started back a couple of weeks ago, you were talking about, you know, other states influencing policy in specific states.
Yes.
How about, do the people in Northampton really care about what goes on in Revere, and should they have a say in it?
No, I don't think they do. And one of the realities of this bill, and it's interesting that you bring up the out of state thing. This bill was essentially written by an out-of-state developer.
Exactly.
To guarantee themselves a casino.
Well, this kind of reminds me of like all these places that want to build a football stadium or a baseball stadium and expect the taxpayers to pay for it.
No, that's good public policy. Because I like football. That's the only reason I say that's good.
Okay.
But that's, I agree with you. That's potentially a problem. But this particular bill, in my eyes, regardless of whether you support it or oppose it, at the very least represents an unusual use of a public referendum question, and in the worst case scenario, represents outright abuse of the public referendum process. We don't have ballot questions so that Joe can open up a clam shack on the beach where Joe's been told he can't open a clam shack. Oh, if the people want the clam shack, then you have to build a clam shack. Because the state is obligated to follow through on these things. So it looks like some developers found an end run around their refute. I believe this bill was written by a developer that was denied a license.
That is my understanding.
Because of certain connections that they had to certain individuals that the state prohibited from being involved in casino operations.
And they're just doing an end run around the gaming commission. It's gross. It's real gross.
It's a shame that we couldn't get somebody from Revere to actually call in and weigh in on how it's going to affect their life.
It would be very difficult to understand that accent.
The reality is...
I'm from Peabody. I understand that dialect.
If you live in Revere, you don't care. If you live in Winthrop, you're going to have all the traffic. Because
that's where the traffic is going
to... Well, all of the access to this beast is going to be coming up Route 1.
There is, well, not even Route 1. It's going to be like Route 1A, which is like a side street like with a church on it.
If you live in Charlestown, you'll be upset too.
You might.
Yeah.
Well, Charlestown has a whole bunch of other reasons to be upset.
Yeah. So that's the question. According to the most recent Suffolk University Boston Globe poll, 13.2% of voters are undecided. 30% support the ballot question. 57% oppose. So even if you pull in that 13.2%, this one isn't looking good.
Well, I mean, again, it comes down to whose lives are affected by this bill passing or not passing. I don't think... You know, I mean, this is a local issue.
You know, we're going to find out in a couple of days
what
was in Huma's emails, and it's going to affect the voters' vote on this.
And it's all going to be pictures of Anthony Weiner's junk.
Yeah, nice. His crooked Hillary.
That they were passing around the State Department.
His crooked Hillary. That's good.
Question number two, charter school expansion. This is a contentious one, kids. The question, if approved, this is the actual language on the ballot. The question, if approved, would let state education officials approve up to 12 new charter schools a year. It's pretty much what it's going to say. What it doesn't say is that there are some restrictions on this. If the state receives more than 12 applications in a year, it must prioritize openings for school districts that perform in the bottom 25% of all districts in Massachusetts on statewide testing. Total enrollment in new charter schools also may not exceed 1% of the total enrollment in Massachusetts public schools. Governor Baker is in support of question number two. It is more or less a who's who of unions that have lined up with the teachers union in opposition to this, along with pretty much every public school board in the state, even in cities and towns that would have zero impact from this. So this is, whether it was intended to be or not, a referendum on the teachers union. And that doesn't sit well with me or a lot of other people. And it certainly doesn't do a damn thing for the kids. Because what this ballot question has become about is whether or not the teachers union is going to continue to control the schools in this state, not who is going to provide the best educational opportunities for struggling children.
You could frame it that way.
Am I out of line?
I'm not saying you're out of line, but I know a lot of teachers who are in the union who are opposed to this measure because they think that charter schools are taking money away from their public schools.
That's the way it works.
It's not solving the problem. So you could say it's a union issue, or the union is actually representing what the teachers think and what the teachers are seeing on the ground.
I can't help but agree with this. I mean, it's like any charter school system almost always comes at the expense of the public school system.
But they also do a better job educating kids. They get better results.
Or they could make the public school system work to educate people better.
Yeah, let's make them all charter schools and give every, come on.
But the reason you can't make them all charter schools, as we know, is the teachers union. And this is where this becomes that question. This is where that problem creeps in.
In which case we need to have some kind of charter teacher program where the best of the best get to be the teachers of the charter schools.
I mean, the reality is most communities in Massachusetts, and by the way, I think the fears on the part of the teachers union are wildly overblown in this. Because it's not like you're going to pass this rule and all of a sudden you're going to have 50 charter schools open in every city and town in Massachusetts. Some cities and towns still will never see a single one because right. They have solid, functional school systems. There is no need for them unless somebody wants to open a media high school or performing arts high school or something like that. We've seen a little bit of that going on in Boston right now. It's the communities that are struggling where we keep throwing good money after bad. And things aren't getting better year over year. They're getting worse. And the parents are sitting there saying, what alternative do we have? I can't afford to homeschool because I'm poor. So I'm stuck with this failing public school that never gets any better. By the time anybody makes any improvements here, my kids are going to be graduated and done.
But I feel like what you're saying is, okay, let's save a couple of kids and let the majority of the kids continue to go to the crappy public school.
But that's what this does, is this saves all the kids, because the kids who would benefit most from the charter school will have a charter school available to them. We have massive waiting lists in this state right now because we put an artificial cap on the number of eligible charter schools at the request of the teachers union when the charter school bill was passed several years back.
Right.
All we're saying is pull off the cap. All we're saying is pull off the cap. There isn't a dime that goes anywhere unless somebody comes in and decides to open a charter school. And then it has to go through this whole approval process.
But people are going to apply for these licenses. New charter schools are going to open up.
Of course they are. Of course.
And money is going to be taken away from these suffering or these poor performing public schools.
Well, a portion of it is going to go to the charter school and a portion of it is going to stay with the public school. It's still allocated on a per student basis.
But, they never take that money from a public school that has plenty of money to buy books and all this other. They always take it from the ones that are crumbling down in the inner cities where that's the only option.
But you're also taking students out of that school. And the way that school budgets are calculated,
you're going to be on a waiting list, though. You have to apply. You can't just go to this school because the other school is crumbling.
But like you said, they're not going to set up these charter schools in a majority of communities. They're not going to be set up in the communities that already have good schools that could probably handle this. It's not going to be in Lexington. It's not going to be in Newton. It's going to be in Boston. It's going to be, you know, in...
It's going to be in Lynn. It's going to be in Brockton. Revere, it's going to be in Lawrence. We know the towns that are going to be affected by this. I don't have to list them. And we know that the schools in those communities are failing. And they are failing partly because there isn't enough public investment in those schools because there isn't a tax base to support it. There isn't additional money coming down from the state to support it. So... every one of these, the way that it works, the way school budgets are drawn up is there is a per capita allowance generally per student. Let's say it's $20,000, okay? Right. So the charter school law, the way that it's written in Massachusetts, basically says you take that $20,000 and you can go to a public school and then it goes into the school system with all that money, or you can go to a charter school and we pay the $20,000 to the charter school. And the charter school has to make do with whatever money that they have. Can't charge additional tuition or anything like that. Still considered a public school. Because the charter school is not bound by the requirements of an entire school system, because you're not trying to pay for K through 12 at a charter school, because you're not, and here, by the way, is a strong negative, they have the ability to say no. So because they're not necessarily taking the special needs kids and the emotionally disturbed kids, they have the ability to do more with that money and invest more of that money in the individual student than the public school does. In the situation that you're describing, Marielle, taken to an extreme, you wind up with a situation where you have a charter school that is serving all of the smart, all of the smart kids in a district, and you have all of the special needs kids and all of the emotionally disturbed kids in the public school with less money to support operations across the board.
And one would think that these kids need a charter school more because they're special needs.
And I'm also thinking it's going to affect a lot of kids whose parents don't speak English or don't know there are these options out there for them. Charter, they're the kids that are going to be behind.
In theory, charter school may actually work better because one of the things that the public schools are struggling with is English as a second language students. If you had a charter school that specialized in students learning in a different language, then you can go out and you can hire the Spanish language teacher, the Dominican language teacher, the Portuguese language teacher. You can go hire all of them.
But there is absolutely no way of knowing that these are the kinds of schools that are going to be created by this bill.
Well, you can look at the charter schools that we have in Massachusetts right now, which in general are very, very good schools. And some of them are specialized. There's a media high school in Boston we didn't used to have. We got a FAME school in Boston, performing arts, we didn't used to have. There are some that are focused on kids with ADD and things like that, that provide opportunities. You need a big population base to make that work. So a lot of this can happen in Boston or Worcester or Springfield, but can't necessarily happen in some of the smaller towns around here.
And I think that's really the point. It doesn't benefit the people that need it the most.
It does, but as Marielle says, it does at the cost of everybody who's left in the other school. The counter argument that I would make to that is the other school isn't working, and nothing is going to reverse that in the short term. In a perfect world, we figure out a way to make schools more functional for more kids. But since no one is doing that, since the parents are frustrated, and since we are basically gambling away the future of a generation, it is incumbent upon us to do something now. Whether that is this bill, or whether that is some other bill that guarantees a certain level of education and does away with, you know, does away with all the nonsense that goes on.
Education reform.
Yeah.
Education reform we really need, but I also think that separate is not equal, and you're just creating a different system, a different class.
But that system exists. That system exists in the Boston schools already, where you have Boston Latin and Boston English versus the regular Boston public schools, and it's been that way for centuries. Mm-hmm. You know, well, not centuries, but it's been that way for a century. We have the exam schools, and we have everybody else. And yes, this adds another wrinkle to that. If you could look at what's happening in Massachusetts and say, our schools are winning, our schools are succeeding, we don't need this, and make that argument convincingly, then I'd say, we don't need this bill. Why are we even talking about this?
I don't think it's that we don't need this bill. I think that this bill isn't exactly the solution to the problem.
All this bill does, the only thing that this bill does, is eliminate an artificial cap that exists on charter schools in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. And it further installs a cap of 12 schools per year. So to get to the point where we would have a meaningful impact on public school systems, we're talking 15, 20 years down the road. And there is likely to be a tremendous amount of public debate before that point and some action taken by city councils. There's nothing in here that says the Boston City Council can't turn around and say no more charter schools.
Right.
They're going to get into a fight with the state if they do.
Right.
But there's nothing to stop that. All this bill does is eliminate a cap. And the fear that is coming out of the teachers' union on this, because it's about power, because it's about who is deciding the fate of education, who is deciding where the public dollars go, it's completely overboard in my eyes.
Well, shouldn't that be up to the teachers and the teachers' council as far as the quality of education?
They aren't paying the tax. I mean, they, in as much as they pay taxes in their communities, yes, they get a vote.
But they're the teachers. They're the people that have to,
but you know, so does everybody else. Because what we're ultimately talking about is, how are we going to use our public dollars for education? How are they best used?
Right.
And the teachers' union and the school boards are trying to block that exercise of our democratic power with a lot of fear that says it's going to be wildly unequal and hellfire is going to rain down, because we'll have 12, potentially have 12 charter schools next year.
Well, there's going to be a way of dealing them in to make it worth their support. If they're not supporting it, there's got to be a reason other than just power and ego.
But that's all it is. It is a challenge to their power because there are no unions in charter schools. That's really what this comes down to. Mm-hmm. And it's sad that it comes down to this. Right now, this one is dead even. The most recent Boston Globe Suffolk University poll, 49% in favor, 45.4% in favor, 45.4% against, 8.6% undecided. That has narrowed from a 10-point gap in late September.
Wow.
Support for the cap repeal was at 49% in September, with 39% against. And since then, the unions have been spending money on television like crazy. So that's where we are with that one. It is WMFO Medford. We're going to catch our breath. We're going to take a very, very quick break. And when we come back, we will have question number 3 and question number 4. Oh, those are the fun ones, kids, right here on WMFO Medford.
So, chances are there'll never be an emergency ever, ever again.
Mm-hmm.
But just in case, let's talk about a plan.
Okay.
So, who's going to do what? Anyone? Yeah, okay, perfect. We'll figure it out as we go. So, who is going to grab the go bag?
What's a go bag? It is a bag we do not have that is filled with things we really, really need in an emergency.
Guess we won't have to worry about it then.
Ah, good point. So, we all know who to call if something happens then, right?
I'd have to call Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
And I will try to call all of you, but Greg doesn't have a cell phone. Dad's phone will have a dead battery.
No doubt.
And Julie will be on the phone with Jill, Devin, Melissa, Karen, and Bruce.
Well, this is great. I am so glad that we don't have a plan.
I know.
Winging It is not an emergency plan. Make sure your kids know what to do during an emergency, who to call, where to meet, what to pack. Visit ready.gov/kids for tips and information. A public service announcement brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Nixon now.
Nixon's the one, man.
I think we could say vote Nixon.
Yes, we can.
I think we're all good. Tell people to go out and vote Richard Nixon.
Vote Nixon. He's going to repeal November. The draft.
That's right. Richard Nixon.
He's going to stop that war in Vietnam.
Such a fair-minded man, Richard Nixon. It's been getting a lot of play this year, and gosh darn it. Makes me hungry for a simpler day in America.
Makes us all nostalgic.
Yeah, for a simpler day in America when there was no political corruption.
When there was no email.
Oh, wait.
Just people getting shot in the head in Cambodia.
It is WMFO Medford. It is The Big Picture. I am Derek Gary, joined by Joel and Mariel Cabral, our political team, as we take a look at the 2016 ballot questions here in Massachusetts. My apologies to anybody who's been hearing music come out of this. Rivendell is really misbehaving tonight.
Unbelievable.
It's being bad, and it has been thoroughly punished now. So, hopefully it will do what it's supposed to do and not bother us anymore. We have four ballot questions here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. The FCC mandates that we give you a straight-up, no-holds-barred, no-opinions-shared sort of view of them.
We're having a vigorous debate.
Just the facts.
Just That's the right. facts. Discuss the issues around them without actually telling you how to vote.
The facts.
And I was surprised, let me say, walking in here tonight to find out that out of all four ballot questions, there was one that I thought was going to get everybody excited, and it wasn't question three. But lo and behold, Joel and Marielle are all like, question three. Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about eggs, people.
Question three. As it will appear on your ballot, conditions for farm animals. This question, if approved, would phase out what advocates say are extreme methods of farm animal confinement. Question three defines confined as meaning that which prevents the animal from lying down, standing up, fully extending its limbs, or turning around freely. Now, this law would apply not just to Massachusetts farmers, but also business owners and retailers.
So grocery stores mostly.
Who sell products from other states.
Baristas will be able to move freely within the Starbucks.
Where animals are not treated according to Massachusetts rules. So if you get eggs from Maine and the chicken's been overly caged, you're going to get fined $1,000.
That is one expensive egg.
That is an expensive egg. Marielle?
I think that, some of the things I've heard against this, there is a mother in Medford who raised her children on the poverty line, and I can't remember her name right now, and she is against this because she is saying that this is going to raise the cost of eggs, and she's saying it's going to raise them, I don't know. The people who are for it saying, yes, it is going to raise a dozen eggs, just a couple of cents.
75 cents.
And saying it's way more than that, and the opponents are saying way more than that. The opponents are saying that it's going to benefit Whole Foods, who already adheres to selling this type of, or already has a supply chain where they...
And Whole Foods is expensive.
Is that Whole Foods where the ass is silent?
What?
Is that Whole Foods?
The ass?
Yeah. The ass is silent.
Yeah, think about it. You'll get it eventually.
I won't.
Lisa Nichols
in
got it.
In the hole? The whole ass?
Oh, my God.
It's a butt joke. Okay.
A butt joke.
Anyway, baggy eggs.
You know what? I think Market Basket can figure it out.
I think people might be able to afford the 75 cents for a dozen eggs.
I don't think poor people buy eggs.
Yeah, poor people buy. It's all they can afford is eggs. Eggs are pretty cheap.
Poor people shop at Burger King. I don't know. I'm just saying things.
No, you're not, because there is a layer of truth to that. Poor people in places like Boston that don't see a need to supply supermarkets in their neighborhoods
right.
do wind up going to Burger King and McDonald's and eating crap all day long.
They live in so-called food deserts.
Yes.
Well, setting aside the irony, first of all, of we're talking about animals that are being pretty mercilessly slaughtered and then consumed for food. And we're talking about their quality of life. You know, I've had farm eggs. I've had free-range food. And I think it tastes better. I think it tastes like the stuff that I grew up with. I think I don't think the law goes far enough because it doesn't include beef. And, you know, currently, right now, beef manufacturers, if you eat a hamburger, you're eating the beef from at least 1,000 cows. It's not local anymore. That's why we're having all this outbreak of Ebola.
Yes, but they're also genetically... they're also... Those 1,000 cows have been genetically selected to be tasty.
Well, that...
You're overlooking that side of it.
That's as may be. But I don't think that we're going far enough. I think that, you know, in order to create food that is healthy for us, that we can eat, we definitely need to have some laws in place. And... I don't eat veal because I think that just eating a baby cow before it's had a chance to grow and be slaughtered as an adult is unethical. Same thing with eggs. You know, we're talking about unborn chicken. And, you know, there are those people who want to protect the unborn but have no problem with eating eggs whatsoever.
No, eggs are just the menstrual cycle of chickens. And that's the fact.
I'm eating eggs every day at lunch.
Eggs are delicious, especially if you get fresh eggs.
Yes.
And free range. They're absolutely delicious.
But I have to say, this is really just giving animals the space to be able to turn around. So we're not talking about, we're not going to be eating eggs from green pasture chickens.
I want Club Med eggs.
I think that would be nice too. But
first of all,
we're giving them the bare minimum.
Isn't some of this stuff tastier if it's not allowed to move?
Absolutely.
So I have an issue with that.
Yeah, you don't want real gamey meat. You know, way too much hemoglobin.
I want
robust flavor.
I want the stuff that's tasty. And if the animal moves and that makes it less tasty, I'm opposed to that.
I want it.
Does that make me a bad person?
I want it fresh.
Yes.
Okay.
So that makes me stop moving before it gets on my plate.
That's fair enough. Yeah.
The argument that is made against this is the argument in favor of high density factory farming, which is what is increasingly going on, where you try and stuff as many animals as you possibly can into a tiny space. So if we have to make the cage an inch bigger so the chicken can turn around, well, that's, you know, we look at it, we're like, give the chickens a little bit more space. The farmers look at it and they're like, that's 1,000 chickens.
Right. And that's raising prices for them. And how sustainable is this? Like, everyone can eat.
But the other side of it. I
know.
This idea that everybody is entitled to food, let's get over that.
Okay? Yeah, let's get over that.
No, we're kidding. But I thought I was a monster for saying.
Some of us are kidding.
I thought I was a monster for saying, isn't it more tasty if it can't move? But you just went up to me on that.
I agree, yes.
You totally went up to me on that.
Women are terrible people. Nasty women.
Nasty.
You're a nasty woman.
I am.
Nasty woman. But the problem with factory farming is and you bring it up when you say one hot dog is made out of 1,000 different cows.
A burger
is made out of 1,000 different cows. It's not quite that bad, but they make those out of the scrapings and the leftovers and who knows what's in there. When you pack the animals in that closely, you create a perfect environment for disease to spread.
In a big way.
And disease to spread across a large number of animals very, very quickly. Mm-hmm. So that any kind of a disease outbreak winds up being much more devastating to the food supply than if you had things decentralized the way they used to be.
And it's much more wasteful because instead of you know, obviously if there's an outbreak of some kind of virus,
right,
you're not killing 500 cows to stave that off. You're killing 1,000 at least. There's a really good book out there. I'm sure you've heard of it, written by Eric Schlosser, called Fast Food Nation.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The film is entertaining, but the book itself is a lot more facts and figures about this, and it goes very thoroughly in depth into the food processing industry, fast food, and farming, and how food is processed and brought to our stores. It covers everything. Having read that, I wanted to be a vegetarian. In fact, I went vegetarian for about 6 months.
And then you missed meat, which is normal.
I totally missed. I had to have barbecue, and you know that's what happens. But at the same time, you know, when you pack that many animals together, not only disease, but then you have accidents. you have parts that are not necessarily germane to a specific animal going into your food that don't belong there. You know, things like rat feces and limbs and arms of people that get caught in the machinery. It's become a very dehumanized way of processing and farming for our food. Right. And I think that we need to strike a better balance so that A, we have healthier food. Don't forget, there are some people in Congress that want to do away with the FDA altogether.
Yeah.
And this is also about...
Because we can trust corporations.
This is also about workers' rights, because a couple summers ago, I drove across country with my family, and we drove past some of these huge factory farms, and they stink. And I've been on a farm, and I know what a working farm smells like. It smells like manure. This was disgusting, and it went on for miles. The stench of just that many animals together, it's not okay. And we have people working in these conditions, and, you know, they're having to do horrible things.
And they're getting sick.
And they're getting sick. Then we're getting sick.
Here's the best corollary I could find for this. And again, maybe I'm throwing out a straw man, but I'll leave it to you to decide. When there is a natural disaster and everyone is forced to flee their homes and live in the center of town, on top of each other, huddled together for warmth and comfort with their waste piling up around them, the World Health Organization and the Red Cross and Doctors Without Borders and the Red Crescent all come running in and start screaming cholera. Yet, we will keep the animals that we eat in similar conditions and think nothing of it.
Yeah, well, you think about the Red Cross condition. That is a short-term thing. With the animals, this is a lifelong event.
I believe we have been dodging a bullet for a very long time as these factory farms have gotten denser and denser and denser, and it is only a matter of time before either some superbug comes along that does us in, or some superbug comes along that does the animals in, and we have nothing to eat but each other.
And that snooze button has been pressed a couple of times already.
Yes, it has. Neither one of those is a desirable outcome.
You're looking mighty tasty today, Derek.
Yes.
I think I might have a snack after this broadcast.
I don't move around that much, so that makes me extra tasty.
Well, that just means it's easier for me to catch you.
But looking at you, I could say the same is probably true. So
this is all fat. There's no meat there at all.
In case you're wondering, this one... we can pretty much call this one right now. It is the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, folks. The most recent Boston Globe Suffolk University poll shows 62.4% say let the animals run free, 24.6% oppose, 1.2% undecided. No, let them run free.
Let them be able to crap in peace.
Yeah, well, when my veal is tough, you're going to be hearing her. You're going to be hearing about it. I'm going to say it's bad enough. They won't let me force feed geese on the weekends anymore.
That poor veal doesn't get to grow up and live to its full potential as a steak.
Now I got to let my veal move around. Don't like it. Question number four, kids. This is the one you've been waiting for, kids. Legalization, regulation, and taxation of marijuana. If voters say yes, Massachusetts will join Colorado, Alaska, Oregon, Washington State, and the District of Columbia in legalizing marijuana for recreational use. Maine is voting on this as well on Tuesday. So if something goes wrong here, you can move a little bit north. This is what you're going to get. You can have 1 ounce of Mary Jane in public. You can have 10 ounces at home if you are over 21. You can grow 6 plants at home. You can give 1 ounce freely to somebody if they're over the age of 21. You also get new bureaucracy. The treasurer will appoint a 3-member cannabis control commission that will oversee implementation of the law and make sure that people are following it. The governor gets to appoint a 15-member cannabis advisory board. We don't know what they do. But there's 15
of them. Maybe they try out the samples.
Yeah.
Advise.
There will be state sales tax.
This is some good stuff right here.
There will be a 3.75% excise tax and a local option for a 2% tax. Maximum tax on recreational marijuana, 12%.
12%, hey.
12%, kids, that's cheaper than beer. Pot use will no longer be used to determine child custody. Because right now you can say, he smokes marijuana, Your Honor, give me the children. Can't do that anymore unless...
Damn, I got to take the children.
Unless the marijuana user is creating an unsafe environment for the kids. And perhaps the best part of all of this, if passed, next Tuesday. It will take effect on December 16th, just in time for Christmas.
Yay, Christmas.
Yay, I know Christmas what I'm getting greenery. My dad for Christmas.
Yes. Well, that's if it passes.
Well, I'm
going to go out on a wild limb here and say that the among this group of people and our listeners, the arguments in favor of legalized marijuana probably far outweigh the arguments against. Would I be wrong in this assessment?
Well, in the interest of full disclosure, I have a card. I use medicinal marijuana. I have a neurological condition. And I go to dispensaries on a fairly regular basis.
And in the interest of full disclosure on my part, I represent a client that holds a license for medical marijuana dispensary currently in Western Massachusetts and is looking at getting a second one.
And I have never inhaled.
Okay.
Really?
No.
So you've never?
No.
Yeah. No. So what? Come on.
So the only the real significant difference between this and the medicinal marijuana laws that were passed a few years back is that you can actually give pot to other people.
No, the difference between this is you might actually be able to buy some somewhere because someone might actually be able to open a dispensary, unlike what we have now.
Right.
Well, I got a dispensary like 10 minutes from my house. I have no problem.
There's like two of them open in the state right now. And the whole process has been a nightmare, but that's a separate thing.
Yes,
you can give somebody an ounce of marijuana.
Yeah, couldn't do that as a medicinal user.
That, to me, is the greatest gift of all.
I think
it's the gift that keeps on giving.
I mean, an ounce of marijuana.
That's a lot of pot.
That's a lot of weed.
That's a lot of pot.
People
used to give me a pre-roll or a bud, and I'd be like, wow, you're my best friend ever. Somebody showed up with an ounce, I'd be like, all right, I'll wash your car for the rest of the year.
That's right.
For someone who's a recreational marijuana smoker, how long would you say like an ounce would last most people?
Me? Oh, well, me, it would probably last a year and a half.
Yeah. Me too.
A couple of weeks.
I mean, you know.
Exactly. I know people who are burning through that in like a week and a half.
But 12% taxes, I mean, that's going to be a windfall for the state,
yeah.
I hope.
Yeah.
It was in Colorado.
Colorado overtaxed. But one of the things that happened in Colorado is they put a tax on it that's equal to about, I think, 30%.
Mm-hmm.
And because the tax rate in Colorado is 30%, there is still a thriving black market in marijuana sales. And there has been some speculation that the grow facilities are skimming a certain amount off and selling it directly to dealers who are taking it to the street. So they're making money off the books.
Right.
If that tax didn't exist, because when you put the 30% tax on it, you're basically saying, oh, no, poor people, you don't get to smoke marijuana. Only the rich get to smoke marijuana.
Right.
But 12%.
It's
cheaper than cigarettes.
I have to say though the commercial that people are running that goes against, everybody's seen it. It's the soccer mom driving her kids around to school, and you know little Jimmy's come out of the dispensary with a big old bag of weed, and there's stuff that looks like candy right there in the windows, and things that look like cakes. Let me tell you something. As Derek said, we've got dispensaries that we can count on one hand, and none of them are like that.
No.
There's a metal detector at mine. I have to go through three levels of security to get in and get my wheelie.
The dispensary, I believe, because I know this is the case in other parts of the country, is the equivalent of a plain brown wrapper. It is a generic, nondescript building with nothing in the windows. And you walk inside and you can see the product inside, but they don't have stuff up outside of the place.
It's clearly
weed gummies now.
You know what is the most appealing to me as a consumer about this are the edibles or the THC oil that you because I have asthma and I don't like smoking and that sort of thing. So if I'm going to consume, that's how I'm going to do it.
Peanut butter sells like crazy out
in
Nevada.
You know, as far as the repercussions, we can look at what's happened in Washington State, Oregon, California, and Colorado as a means of what happens. It's going to be like when they lifted Prohibition. You know, things are going to be a little crazy for a little bit of time, but it'll level out. And the people that you know are opposed to this, and I'm sure there are somebody. I just haven't met anybody that's opposed to it yet. I can understand. Look, they don't want it on their street corner.
Right.
But you can go to a street corner and buy alcohol and coffee, which will kill you.
The Catholic bishops are opposed, as is Governor Charlie Baker, Mayor Marty Walsh, A.G. Mar Healy, and the construction industries of Massachusetts, among others.
Well, they are afraid no one is going to show up to work.
They're right. Just, no, they're afraid everyone's going to show up to work high.
The 12% is going to be good revenue for the state. It's going to bring in a lot more money than what the cannabis... What's the CCC? What's it stand for? Cannabis Commission?
Yeah.
It's not Cannabis Control Board. That much.
Yeah. And the worst case scenario, everybody's late to work and eating a lot of Doritos.
I'm already late to work and eating a lot of Doritos. This is
a body that loves Doritos.
Things.
I won't lie.
We're all smoking pot already. Let the state get some money off
just
of it.
Just not in the Air Studio.
This one's tighter than you might think. The most recent Globe Suffolk University poll shows 48.8% support, 42.4% oppose.
It's always been that tight, though.
7.8% undecided. Well, this is interesting because there was an earlier poll by WBUR and Mass Inc. earlier in October that showed 55% support, 40% opposed, 5% undecided. Now, the BUR folks we know are going to lean a little bit more to the left, possibly than the Suffolk University.
Bob Oakes gets high every day.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see. It's a tight one, but I think it's going to pass. We're going to pass to a very brief message, and when we come back, our favorite things from the past week and the strangest thing from the past week, and then On the Town with Mikey D right here on WMFO Medford.
This is my story.
I'm Ellen, and this is my story. One night I was at a bar.
I was having fun with my friends. I had one too many drinks. I got behind the wheel to go home.
I got a cab to go home.
All of a sudden, from out of nowhere, a squirrel ran across the road. It happened so quickly, I barely had time to react.
The cabbie barely had time to react.
I swerved.
The cab swerved.
I can't believe it. I hit a guy.
I cannot believe it. The cabbie just missed a guy.
I wish I took a cab.
Thank goodness I took a cab.
You have the choice to save a life. Don't drive buzzed. It's a decision you'll never regret. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the Department of Transportation and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is the big picture until 9 o'clock when On the Town, Mikey D will be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-9636. As we do every week at this time, what's hot? It's just me this week. It is my favorite thing from the past week. Or actually, this time around, the upcoming week. Because my favorite thing is voting. We are privileged to live in a country where we are free to decide who we want to represent us. And while this election cycle has revealed some of the worst of what goes on behind the scenes, such as the efforts to keep Bernie Sanders off the ballot by the Democratic National Committee, it has also revealed how the system works as, for better or for worse, the American people were able to stand up to the Republican Party and choose Donald Trump as their nominee. No matter what you think of the choices we have on top of the ticket, you still possess a right to have your vote counted. That right was forged in the fire of revolution and defended with the blood of millions of Americans who fought to protect our great experiment. No thanks have ever been asked for those sacrifices, save that we the people would exercise our rights each November to collectively try and improve our nation. Locally, there are ballot questions and down-ticket races that will impact your life. Voting takes minutes from your day that can pay off for generations to come, making it the best time investment any American can make. I hope you will join me in casting a ballot next Tuesday, and that you will recognize that this exercise in democracy, for all of its challenges in 2016, remains one of the best and most essential parts of our shared experience as Americans.
Please vote.
Good night and good luck.
Please, please, please get out there and vote.
Do it.
And at the sound of that music, that's a thing that happened. Strangest story of the past week. Texas. Here's some advice for the college
kids.
It's
either Texas or Florida.
Don't post naked pictures of yourself on the internet while you're driving. Drunk.
Oh, no.
That's the lesson learned by Texas A&M freshman Miranda K. Rader, who is taking a topless selfie on Snapchat while driving drunk.
Wait a second. I'm trying to find it on Snapchat.
when she rear-ended a police cruiser in the town of Bryan, Texas.
Miranda.
After the crash, the police officer whose car was hit noticed that Raider was trying to put her blouse back on and that there was an open bottle of wine on her SUV's center console. When the officer asked why she was undressed, Raider told him she was taking a topless selfie for her boyfriend on Snapchat at a red light. Raider was booked and later released on $2,000 bail.
Did they read her the Miranda warning?
Hopefully paid by her boyfriend, who we can all agree is the luckiest guy in the world.